This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mimi and I were commenting at length yesterday about how good you look with the beard.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I said to him. The beard looked sensational in HD.
Yeah, it did. It was shining.
Yeah.
And your hair looked good as well. Did you get someone to do your hair?
No, but I picked that up on the monitor. I had no idea what they put in my hair. They sprayed it, but that was it.
It looked great.
They use all kinds of different products. Yeah. You can never really get a read on exactly
on curly hair, they use this stick, and it makes it go amazingly like wavy. So it gets rid of all the frizz and makes it really wavy. And like I said to the woman, what is that product? Can I get it? She's like, it's like Salon Only. And I was like,
Salon Only.
I wish I'd got the name of it so I could get it online.
You
or
have
something.
To be professional to use it.
Yeah. They wouldn't put it in the hands of anyone. It's like a firearm.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, let's do this. Chaps, we're at the halfway stage in the Champions League group stage now. I wondered if you would be able to give us a kind of overview or a state of play. Who's impressed you? Who hasn't impressed you? What we've learned from the competition so far this season?
Well, City have impressed me, but I think they tend to impress in the group stages, and we need to wait and see what they do come February. But certainly on Tuesday night against Atalanta, I thought Raheem Sterling was fantastic. And it was a team that I suppose overcame some adversity in that they went behind. They lost Rodri early on and they still found a way to win. And you'd expect City to do that because they've got the best coach in the world. They're well-resourced. They have got depth, even though they find a problem position every year.
Yeah.
Left back, albeit now at centre back. But they've impressed, and I'd say also PSG. But again, you're judging PSG on what I would say is still quite a weak group. And I count Real Madrid in that because Madrid continue
a pretty average at Galatasaray
to look average as they did against Brugge. But you look at that PSG is front line, and they've just got so many weapons, ones that that remain holstered, like Neymar, either because he's been suspended or he's been injured. You've got Di Maria, who is often forgotten about post-Madrid, post-Manchester United, and he's having a fantastic season. Has probably been their best player this year under Tuchel. And they've just got so much going for them. And I think the balance of the team is better than it has been probably since they had that midfield of Matuidi, Verratti, Thiago Motta. And also, I must say, someone that I'd written off as being in decline and reaching the kind of end of his career, the twilight, is
not Andy Brassel.
Oh,
you're saying?
No, of course not.
Outrageously rude.
But one of his favourite players, Thiago Silva.
Yeah, and I'm pretty much sure I'm younger than him as well.
Yeah.
I definitely look younger than him.
What's happened with Thiago Silva? Because people assumed he was kind of on his way out, and now you're saying he's having this bit of an Indian summer in his career.
I think a huge part of that is he's not expected to be the leader anymore.
Mm.
And that's something that he's a terrific defender, but he's never been a particularly terrific leader. And that's because he's someone who's deeply emotional. He's a real warrior, and that's what he does best. And I think almost Marquinhos, the younger Brazilian defender that they've got, he's the more natural leader. And it was interesting, wasn't it, earlier in the season to see the Paris Saint-Germain fans get out that enormous tifo for Marquinhos just to say, you are our leader.
Mm.
You are the guy who's in charge despite everything that's happened in recent years. You're the one we can hang our hat on. You're the one we can trust.
And that's curious, isn't it, Andy? Because really since Zlatan left, I think they've struggled to identify a leader. They brought in Buffon, even though Buffon was not necessarily going to be their starting goalkeeper, but to be someone who had a big voice in the dressing room.
A focal point, a kind of guy people could look to and say, "This is, I've done this before, this is how we do this," and just someone to look to. You know?
But could Thomas Tuchel be said to have diminished Buffon's influence by not giving him the role he wanted
absolutely.
Or expected?
And as we saw at the weekend,
in fact, he diminished two goalkeepers, didn't he?
Bring this up, but you know, if Buffon doesn't make that 93rd minute save from Federico Santander.
That's a brilliant save.
Then they don't win the game.
It's a brilliant save.
Still got a lot to offer, Gigi.
You know, and I think if I were to write newspaper headline for that particular incident and that story, I would probably use the headline "Goalkeeper Makes Save," which is very much, as I understand, part of his job description. James.
Yeah, indeed.
or as Andy Jacobs pointed out to me on TalkSport, Santander thought it was a banker.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Can I just say I had absolutely no real strong opinion of Gianluigi Buffon until I met James. I thought he was a great keeper. I just, you know, he's kind of like these guys, part of the furniture of European football as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
But when James put his cards on the table, I sensed a weakness. And I tried to exploit it.
I suppose the reason for that is I've always built him up to be more than a goalkeeper.
You have,
and we judge him on
Meshke and keeper.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. But what about, I'll tell you, let me turn your attention if I can very quickly, because I'm sure we could all talk about PSG and City until the cows come home. But the most interesting group I'll posit to you guys at this halfway stage is actually Group G, with Leipzig on top, Zenit St. Petersburg in second place. Benfica have found it very, very difficult. Only have that one win over Lyon at home.
And really, the way they played, they should be out of it.
Yeah,
I mean, this already is typically the group that Porto are drawn in. It's either this one or Group H, which has Chelsea, Ajax, Valencia and Lille. The one that is eminently get-outable.
Can I just...
I mean, Porto have been unfortunate this year in that they've been drawn in that same group, but in the Europa League.
Yeah.
How did they do it?
Can I also offer that? I'll tell you, when I look at that, RB Leipzig, Zenit St. Petersburg, Lyon, Benfica, Group G, in my mind, I'm thinking straight away, that's a Man United group, that is.
Yes.
They always get a group like that as well, but they're not even in it this year. But have you been, Andy, I'll come to you. Have you been impressed with Leipzig? I know a lot's been made of their potential chances in the Bundesliga this season, but they're top of their Champions League group. Yes, it is an eminently winnable group, but you've got to go out there and do it, and so far they have done that.
Julian Nagelsmann, I think, will not believe his luck so far, because they looked green, committed a load of errors in their last game against Lyon, and then Lyon go and chuck one in the final minutes of that game against Benfica.
I mean, literally chuck one in. Anthony Lopez, Portuguese goalkeeper for Lyon.
just
throwing it to Pizzi to just dink over him.
Oh,
but the thing is...
Infowars.com. James Horncastle with the conspiracy.
Now, we've had Brexit. I will not stand for that or this. Come on.
Sorry, Andy, James was just saying that jet fuel doesn't melt steel beams. Carry on.
Well, the thing is, I guess Lopez, who is a keeper who will get no criticism for it because he's an absolute Lyon hero. He's loved by the ultras. He saves them time and time again. And that mistake could happen to everyone. But the sort of mistake that was, It was when you go back to Karius in Kiev, he's just a little bit further down the line from Karius in terms of that mistake, because it's 1-1 at the time at the Stadio Delusion. Leona pushing for a winner. And he goes to the front of his area. He's a very proactive keeper. He learned 80% of what he knows off Hugo Lloris. So he likes to come to the edge of the box. So he collects it.
So that's how you explain this error.
Wait for it.
This is a goalkeeper special. I'm loving it.
And he's just trying to get on with it really quickly.
Mm.
And so he just gets rid of it without really looking. Now, when you go back to Karius in the 2018 final, the third one where he lets it through his hands, when Gareth Bale has the shot from way out, you can tell what he's trying to do.
Yes.
He's thinking,
moved on to the next job.
Yeah, he's thinking of getting it back up the pitch. And obviously, he hasn't thought about actually fielding the shot itself. Mm. So Lopez has done the first bit. He's fielded the ball, but then he's got on with the throw without really looking where everyone is. And you wouldn't expect that from such an experienced goalkeeper. And at that point, there was only one team that looked as if they were going to win the game, and it was Lyon. They were much better in the second half. After Memphis equalised, the crowd were really on Benfica's backs. It was really noticeable, even watching a feed of it on television. So far, this group feels like teams who've missed chances and given chances. I mean, I would actually say, even though it looks an eminently winnable group, all of those four teams have quality, but they've only really shown it in very small parts so far. So you look at that Leipzig-Zenit game, for example. Of course, the winner from Sabitzer, which was absolutely fantastic.
Beauty, yeah.
The first goal by Zenit from Rakitsky, I think it was something that Don Hutchison commented on BT Sport when you were doing the coverage of that before the goal show. He was marvelling that, I think, that Rakitsky, for a centre-back, to have that kind of technique. And it's something we see again and again from Rakitsky. He's a really accomplished
good free
shooter.
Ticker.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's really added something to that defence. He's got so much technique.
The funny thing
covers his lack of pace, for example.
The funny thing about that, Andy, was Paul Dempsey, who was commentating on it, saying, "You surely won't see a better goal tonight." Yeah. And then the winner from Sabitzer was the goal of the night, rivaled by Oxlade-Chamberlain.
I think he threw that out there for a bit of commentator's curse. He's like, "I want to see a better goal than that tonight."
You got to love Dempo.
But the thing about Leipzig, they haven't been in great form of late. And you also look at what Nagelsmann did in that game. He took off Timo Werner at halftime, which was a gutsy decision.
Mm.
And ultimately, they came back from behind. They ended up winning that game. But there was the shot of Timo Werner kind of watching the game.
In a coat far too big for him.
Didn't look best pleased, even though the result obviously ended up going his team's way.
Yeah.
But someone who didn't really affect the game at all. And yeah, it's often these decisions, unless you get the kind of 3 points, they are outcome judged, I'd say. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
For Nagelsmann.
Absolutely.
Because if that doesn't change at that scoreline, and he's taken his best player off, and there doesn't seem, you'll know better than me, Andy, it doesn't seem there was an injury, then it can really come back to haunt it.
Well, my rather sort of rudimentary reading of it, and I'll obviously leave the expert analysis to you guys, it's just that in that situation, if they lose to Zenit there, the table looks so different. I mean, they're in big trouble. They know they have to win it, particularly at home.
That's right. But I don't just think it's Champions League, Luke. I think we'll talk about the Bundesliga more widely later on. But the main problem that Nagelsmann has had so far this season, and the main thing that's put a break both on their title ambitions, although they're by no means out of it, of course, again, as we'll discuss later, and has really put a break on their chances of having a perfect start, they look very tentative at home. Leipzig. And to an extent, that's understandable. And that's a problem that, to an extent, predates Nagelsmann, because they're very much a reactive, counter-attacking sort of side. Now, he's a coach who you would expect in time to give them a more varied palette, an ability to take the game to teams as well. And that's how he evolved Hoffenheim, for example. But I can't really think of an authoritative home performance they've given so far this season. So for them to come out in the second half and turn it around didn't just feel significant in terms of reviving their hopes in the Champions League. And of course, you know, it's by no means done. They've still got to go to Zenit next, for example, and that's going to be really tough for them. But in terms of them going some way to fixing a problem that look like it might fetter their season and might still fetter their season is really important.
I'd also just add one last thing on that, is how big a result that is for Nagelsmann, not only because of the change he made, but remember what his Hoffenheim team were like in the Champions League. You know, they were a team that was much hyped because of him and where he's come from, and didn't deliver. We seem to be as a team that was too kamikaze to play in the Champions League or progress in the Champions League. And I think there was a real feeling that, again, unless they turned that around last night, this question mark over Nagelsmann in the Champions League and whether his style can actually deliver and get results in it was going to continue. But I think there's a lot, that's a much better team than his Hoffenheim side.
I was about to say, I mean, you know, we'll keep it Champions League for now, if you don't mind, chats. We'll talk, as Andy says, we'll talk a bit about Germany later. But if you look at the team that Nagelsmann, all the players he's got at his disposal, I mean, Timo Werner, Emil Forsberg.
Best young defence in European football.
Yeah, Upamecano is really highly rated. Everyone wants him, apparently.
And Konate next to him is perhaps even better.
Mm. Exactly. But didn't Orban play?
Yes.
And then Sabitzer, of course. They've got the Danish international guy on the bed, Poulsen, who scored last
year. His name is Yusuf Poulsen.
Yeah, exactly. So they've got a lot of sort of players to be excited about. What do you think is realistic for them? And you'd fancy them to get out of the group and maybe progress, but what is realistic for them and for Nagelsmann?
I feel less convinced about them getting out of the group.
Right. Next game's key, isn't it?
Than I did before the start. At the start, before any games had been played, I thought they would get out of the group, and it would be between Zenit and Lyon, because Benfica in recent years have always flattered to deceive in a Champions League context.
Yeah.
But they've given themselves a chance, but I think it's just a chance. If they've got to the last 16, I think they've done well, given that, as James says, Nagelsmann is kind of learning on the job in a Champions League context.
I mean, two of their last three games in the Champions League are away from home.
Yeah.
So,
and against arguably the best.
I think they get next game against Zenit's
two
key.
Other teams in the group.
If they beat Zenit away, they're in good shape. Can I ask you very quickly both about Inter beating Dortmund? A massive win for them. They were sitting bottom of their Champions League group, of what is obviously a very competitive group going into this game. I thought they acquitted themselves really well. Obviously, they got the second goal later on the break, and that's perhaps to be expected. But the breakthrough goal, which looked borderline offside, but he just kind of got away with it. Your man again, Golbe, Lautaro Martinez, breaking the deadlock. What do you make of this Inter team? I think, and as I said to you, I make no bones about it to the listeners, I said to you before we came on today, as soon as Inter got drawn in that group, I had a bet on them to win the whole thing, because if they go through the group, you can trade out later on, because they were such a big price because the group is so tough. Yeah. They've given themselves a chance now, haven't they?
They have. Ultimately, the one regret that they have so far is that draw against Slavia Prague at San Siro on match day one, when they only got an equaliser in stoppage time from Barella.
They perhaps look better than we'd expect Slavia Prague, haven't they?
Yes, and we'll maybe get to them in a moment, because I thought they were probably the better team against Barcelona last night. But Inter were very, very good for an hour against Barcelona at the Camp Nou, and I think deserved more than they got in that game. And going into this match, a lot of the focus was on how Inter have started to concede goals. You know, they conceded 8 in their last 4 games, 3 at the weekend against Sassuolo.
My game of the week? Was
your
it?
Game of the week, Lukey.
4-3?
Exactly.
Carry on. I just wanted to
you're allowed a game of the week? This is bullshit.
I'm changing it up. I am now.
What I counter to that is, if you look at the opponents that they played, Juventus, Barcelona, who only beat them late, and it was some Messi Suarez magic that undid them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Sassuolo game, they're 4-1 up. And ultimately they make changes with the Dortmund game in mind. And particularly Valentin Lazzaro, who they brought on, had a nightmare. And Sassuolo were able to get at him and get back into the game, but without ever giving the impression that they were going to actually win it or equalise, I'd say. But in this one, they were really controlled, really measured. I thought it was a mature performance.
But Brozovic was fantastic, wasn't he?
Brozovic was great. And he, over the last, I'd say, 18 months, has really matured and developed into one of the best kind of deep-lying playmakers in European football, in my opinion.
He needs a good meal.
He does. He does look gaunt, doesn't he?
He's so gaunt, yes.
Yeah. But
the delay on that pass for the second goal was absolutely exquisite.
And they limited Dortmund to five shots. Not five shots on target, five shots in the entire game. Mm. And I was a little bit surprised by that, even though Dortmund were without Paco Alcacer and Marco Reus, because they played three guys up front who all have the profiles that kind of cause this inter back three problems in Sancho, in Julian Brandt, and Torgan Hazard. And the players who've given that inter defence issues have been the kind of tens who play between the lines, not your big burly centre forwards who like to play up against centre backs, or the guys that you can put crosses into the box for, because Inter, that's meat and drink for their back line.
All those three can handle
and
themselves, can't they? Yeah.
Those guys never got a look in last night, partly because I think Inter, they decided not to press at all. They only pressed on goal kicks or set pieces, and they just stood off and said, come on then, break us down. Mm. And then they were able to play through Dortmund. And I think Conte made a lot of this after the game. He felt it was a big compliment that Lucien Favre, who never or rarely changes his tactics, changed and went to mirror Conte's 3-5-2. And it wasn't a game that Inter prepared for, because they prepared to play a team that was going to play 4-2-3-1 with different personnel, and yet they were able to adjust in-game. And of course, then when Dortmund went back to what they know, 4-2-3-1, Inter were like, fine, brilliant.
Yeah.
This is what we planned for, and I thought they got better as the game went on.
I'm going to point this to you. I felt that Dortmund, and perhaps this is understandable away from home, that they looked a bit overrun in the midfield, like Witsel and Delaney. I thought Delaney had a really poor game, and they got a bit overrun. I thought maybe that's understandable because Inter are a good team at home, but it was a bit disappointing.
No, I think Witsel was a little bit off the pace as well.
Yeah.
I mean, for part of that, I think you can say they had the weekend game against Schalke, the Revier derby, in their minds, because that is absolutely huge, and that's something that they really need to make a good job of. But I do wonder if Witsel and Delaney are in two minds a little bit as well, because that defence needs a lot of protection at the moment, I feel. And the shape of the team was a bit ugly. I think that the fact that when you've got Hummels and Weigl at centre-back, they're both fantastic on the ball. They're both positionally excellent. If they get beaten, there's not really any comeback, because they're not particularly quick, which I do think is an issue.
Why do they play the same two midfield players then in a difficult derby game in the weekend in the Bundesliga, and then play it again in a difficult away game in the Champions League?
Well, they wanted to get a result out of this. And also,
he thinks that's his best combo.
Yeah, I think they don't know really where they're at defensively at the moment. It's like Akanji is kind of being hidden a little bit at right back.
Right.
He had a really poor game there at the weekend against Gladbach, and he's not in great nick at all at the moment. I thought the role of Ashraf Hakimi was a little bit ill-defined. Was he a wing back? Was he a winger? Mm. And also, I just think what you were saying about that front three, James, the fact that none of them really have a striker's instinct, I think really played into Inter's hands. They just weren't getting anyone in the penalty box. And it's something that Michael Sork talked about afterwards. I think you saw right at the end of the first half where they were getting a little bit of joy getting around the back of Inter. And I think Inter's tactics were always going to dictate that could be the case. If Dortmund were going to get at them, it would be from wide areas. And they weren't able to do that nearly often enough. But when Sancho got in, had that shot, and it was saved very well by Handanovic, there's no one there to pick it. There's no one in the...
No one with that instinct to follow up.
Exactly.
There's think positive.
There's one player who's just in the penalty box, and that's Nico Schultz, the left back.
Yeah.
I know he's quite an attacking left back, but still, come on.
Yeah, that was a brilliant piece of play from Sancho. He kind of pulled that shot away from nowhere. No back lift, didn't really see it coming. Yeah. It's a good save, actually, wasn't it? Down let low by Handanovic.
But a quiet night for him on the whole. And after he was left out of the squad for the game against Borussia Mönchengladbach at the weekend, he was again late back from international duty. He's just making his way off the naughty step. Of course, he scored the winner against Schalke at the Veltins Arena last year in the fixture there. So if he did something like that again this year, that would maybe make a bit of reparation.
I think I already know what Andy's game of the week is going to be.
give us a couple of minutes just very quickly on Sancho and the current status of him at Dortmund.
Well, they are not only trying to bring a young player into line, but I think they're trying to protect an investment as well, because they know realistically that they probably won't be able to hold him beyond the end of this season. Nevertheless, he remains an important player to them for the moment, a very important player to them for the moment. Obviously, his productivity is absolutely off the scale. But also, I think they want to steer him away from going in the sort of direction that Ousmane Dembélé went in. Because I think when you're selling a player for the sort of volume of money that they're going to be selling him for, and they will sell him for more than they sold Dembélé for, I don't think there's any doubt about that, especially as he's English and especially as there's that Premier League market out there for him. I think people look at Dembélé and they almost overlook the fact that he's been so clutch for Barcelona. Incidentally, elsewhere, I think if you look at this group, beyond Dortmund, beyond Inter, the story of the group is really the fact that Barcelona have been really lucky so far. You know, they could have dropped points against, they should have dropped points against Inter. They should have lost to Dortmund on match day one.
Ter Stegen.
Yeah, absolutely. They've been heavily criticised for their performance against Slavia. So this group could look very differently without a few little sleights of hand. But going back to the Dembélé Sancho thing, I think that people overlook the fact that Dembélé's come up big at so many moments for Barcelona because of the other stuff, because of oversleeping, because of the talk about his attitude. And I think Dortmund are having half a look and thinking, well, we don't want people to think that Sancho is going to become another Dembélé, because that's going to limit our ability to cash in on him to the extent that we want to. So what they want to do is preserve not just the player for now, who's an incredibly important player for them now, but they want to preserve the image of the player internationally as a young man who's come abroad to a country and a league that he doesn't know, worked incredibly hard and has been a huge asset for the team. They don't want him to get a reputation for poor timekeeping.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
All right, so when I do little notes for this show,
yes,
I normally write down a little précis of what we're going to talk about and the little bullet points just to help me out. And for Germany, the Bundesliga this week, I've literally just put, it's lit.
The Fundesliga.
It is lit. The Fundesliga. Exactly, James. state of play in Germany's top flight at the moment is that Borussia Mönchengladbach sit top of the table on goal difference on 16 points. But there are 2 points separating the top nine teams, going all the way down to Bayer Leverkusen in ninth. Is this just an anomaly of the early season where everyone's shuffling and kind of jostling for position and we'll see it settle down? Or are we seeing something a little bit more interesting here, Andy Brassel?
I think it might settle down, but I think the feeling that no one wants to win it at this early stage is a little bit overwhelming. And that was enhanced last weekend because, of course, as we said, Gladbach lost at Dortmund, yet stayed top. There were six teams who had the opportunity to overtake them over the rest of the weekend, and they all missed it. Dortmund and Eintracht Frankfurt are the only teams in that top bracket who actually won last weekend, which is extraordinary, really. I mean, Schalke were the team who last had the opportunity to leapfrog Gladbach. They could have done that in the late game on Sunday. And they went and lost and give a really ordinary second half performance at Hoffenheim, who now have got two successive wins, having beaten Bayern away before the international break. And it was interesting, I think, seeing David Wagner come out afterwards and greet his players and, of course, shepherd them towards the away fans. You have to do that. You should do that anyway, but it's a big part of the Bundesliga experience. But after that second half performance, if I was David Wagner, I would have been, come on, lads, what on earth was that? And he was all giving them a pat on the back. It was, oh, well, you know, we're in development. Really? What do you expect?
Yeah.
You know, oh, you're rubbish. Don't worry about it, kind of thing. Not that they're rubbish, but that they have limits. I think that's something that he's very conscious of. I think a lot of these teams have limits. Now, the big question, quite apart from Schalke Dortmund this weekend, is Bayern. And, you know, we were talking...
FC Bayern, Fußballmeisters.
I think you should leave the Fußballmeister bit off until we get to the end of this section. We'll maybe condition it. Because
they play Union Berlin this weekend, don't they?
Yeah,
at home.
They do, and, you know, you would expect them to...
It's a banker.
Yeah, you would expect them... Yeah, it's Santander.
It is.
But I think...
I actually do bank with Santander as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Good old you.
Carry on.
Yeah. I think there are two aspects to this. Firstly, when we were talking about the Champions League at the top, and there are those three teams that have got maximum points so far, Paris Saint-Germain, Manchester City and Bayern, and they've all left very differing impressions in the Champions League so far. And Bayern conceding 2 goals again. I think that's the fourth successive game.
As they did against Spurs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's the second thing and the most important thing in the Bundesliga context. In the two league games since they did beat Spurs, they've played Hoffenheim at home, Augsburg away. 6 points.
Mm.
1 point.
Yeah.
1 point from
how
those
much,
two
how
games.
Much lost Zula.
Yeah, he's not, a big blow for them.
Not only Zula, who, of course...
he'll be out for the rest of the season. Yeah,
and probably the Euros. He did his ACL at Augsburg last week. They conceded in the first minute and the last minute at Augsburg, which seems unbelievably reckless. The other thing is, when they were at Olympiacos this week, and we're talking about Manchester City and their problem position, Lucas Hernandez did his ankle ligaments this week and in Olympiacos, and he's going to have an operation. Now, he would have been one of the key people to cover for Zula. And you look at that and you think, it's unfortunate for Bayern. You have to feel for them, because here's a guy who's their record signing, and the club are absolutely furious because Dr. Müller-Wohlfahrt sent a full report actually, to the French Football Federation before the last international break, saying, don't play Hernandez, he isn't fit enough. So what do they do?
Right.
They play him.
Right.
So what happens a week later?
Yeah.
He gets an injury that's going to see him out till New Year and possibly longer. And of course, he arrived injured in the first place. He's still adapting to the Bundesliga. Made an error in the build-up to the second Augsburg equaliser that sort of pointed to the fact that maybe he's still A, not fit, and B, finding his mark. So they're in a position where they look as if Jerome Boateng, a player who they've been shopping for over a year, is probably going to become a relatively important one again over the next couple of months.
Is it too simplistic? I mean, you look down at the top nine teams in the Bundesliga that I mentioned at the start of this, and only by a Leverkusen...
The top nine teams.
Yeah, I know.
only by a Leverkusen...
top nine's the new top four.
...have conceded more goals than Bayern Munich. Is it too simplistic to say that they've actually been a little bit fortunate that Lewandowski's been in such good form to bail them out?
Absolutely.
Is that too simplistic or is that accurate?
I don't think it is simplistic, Luke, because if you look at both ends of the pitch... When Lewandowski's not scoring, you wonder who is scoring. Yeah. I mean, you know, you've had the exceptions. So Gnabry,
he's got 55% of their goals in the Bundesliga this season.
It feels like more.
Yeah.
It really feels like more. And if you look at the exceptions to that this season, where Gnabry went off in the second half at Spurs, like that Corentin Tolisso thunderbolt in the week against Olympiacos, it feels as if they're, you know, outstanding moments, acts of God, rather than, you know, all-round great bits of team play, which is a little bit of a concern. And if anything does happen to Lewandowski, there's no real cover for him. The fact as well that if you were to rest or replace Lewandowski, which I know is very, very unlikely at the moment, but if they were to find themselves in a situation where they had to do that or they wanted to do that, who would you say was the most obvious choice to go in the middle? Probably Thomas Müller. Now, Thomas Müller is thought
to... You didn't even give me a chance to answer that then. I would have said Thomas Müller as well. He's been shopped around as well.
We do have quite similar voices, so the listeners aren't to know that you didn't say that.
Isn't he being shopped around as well, though? Well, he wants to leave, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's quite keen.
But are they not in the same position? And the Spurs are in with Kane, for example. It's impossible to have someone as a backup because he's so reliable.
Well, they had it for a while with Sandro Wagner, and that didn't last. I thought it played okay while they had it. I mean, he's not a very Bayern type of player, but I think the fact that he was quite a different type of player was something that made him a bit valuable. I think Wagner, for most of the time he was there, until it went wrong at the end, it worked out how Spurs hoped Llorente would work out as cover for Kane, really. Mm. But, you know, they've got lots of players who should be able to drop into that central position. Because Lewandowski's such a warrior, it's not become an issue. But I think what the issue with Müller is, as you say, he's not particularly happy at the moment. That there's the feeling that Kovac hasn't handled him particularly well. And there's also that feeling with Javi Martinez, who again came off against Olympiacos, but he's going to be a more and more important player now in being a linchpin for that midfield, because with the defensive injuries, Kimmich is going to move back to right back. Now, some people would say he should have been at right back all along. I would say that, for example. Mm. And that Bayern quite miss him when he's not a right back. So if there is a silver lining to the defensive injuries that Bayern are suffering at the moment, it does mean, with Pavard probably needed in the centre of defence, that Kimmich will be moved back to his ideal position, really.
Any German thoughts from you, James?
Well, Müller will outlast Kovac, without doubt. I think.
Well, that's what he's banking
on. That.
Yeah. It's like Bale and Zidane, really, isn't it? But even more so.
There's a lot of politicking. You know, read between the lines whenever you hear the players talk. Yeah, I think Neuer gave an interview in France Football this week where he was saying, you know, that every pass, you know, that you can't have a meaningless pass. It has to transmit a message to the recipient of that pass.
Jesus.
And what he's saying there is, you know, when we had Pep Guardiola, we played a very sophisticated passing style. And you know,
poor old Kovac.
You can deduce that these passing patterns are not as sophisticated. On the contrary, there. Quite reductive, quite limited on the Niko Kovac. And that's been the suspicion all along. And I mean, yeah, looking at that table in the Bundesliga right now, I think the one thing that is holding Bayern back, and one of the things that's going to be really interesting with all these injuries, is that the two teams atop, Wolfsburg and Gladbach, are the two teams with the best defences in the league.
Yeah, Wolfsburg have got statistically the best defence so far, and they're the only unbeaten team still. Yeah. I think the other team, when we're talking of Kovac, that's worth a mention is Eintracht Frankfurt, actually, because
in eighth, just two points off the top.
And when you bear in mind, they beat Bayer Leverkusen 3-0 last week, and when you bear in mind that they've gone from strength to strength under Kovac, but of course they've lost their big front three of Rebic, Jovic and Alaire.
Mm.
And yet... they've managed to find a way to, you know, they've been pretty prolific so far this season. And they've replaced them with forwards who couldn't really be more different.
Bas Dost!
Goldust.
Baz Dost, who probably wouldn't have played last weekend.
Scored.
But he probably wouldn't have played last weekend if it hadn't have been for a late injury to Andre Silva, because they've been going with Silva and Paciencia up front. And Paciencia has been really terrific so far.
The headline of that
game,
you've
got the click,
Jandy,
with Kovac, who comes in from the Kovac.
I was going to say, he's busy enough as it is.
Yeah, Kostic, who comes in from the left hand side, and
Dost does Bosch. Link. Should have been the headline,
shouldn't it?
Probably.
Dost does Bosch. Carry on. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, you say it dust, so it doesn't really work.
Okay, fair enough.
Never mind. But they're very different types of strikers. You look at Paciencia is the only one of those three strikers, if you look at Silva and Dost as well, who really does anything outside the penalty box. He's a bit bigger physically. He's not as good as Allaire, and he's not got as wide a palate as Allaire, but he is someone who can hold the ball up, who can bring other people into play, who can find a pass. So I think that is an indication of how much, at least initially, they missed Allaire, that they've relied a little bit more on Paciencia, who was very much a sub for a lot of last season, although he did have a knee injury.
But that was never a 3-0 game, by the way. Frankfurt's keeper was, if it's the one I'm thinking of, Frankfurt's keeper had an absolute blinder.
Yeah, Frederik Renov. He had a really good game. And
they had more shots, Leverkusen. They had much more of the ball as well.
Yeah, although I would say they were only good in the second half, by which time they were 2-0 down already. But Renov had a really good game, and is remarkable for two reasons. Firstly, he was standing in for Kevin Trapp, who was out, who's undoubtedly the first choice there. And a lot of Frankfurt fans have not got a great deal of confidence in Renov, but he got absolutely no sleep before the game because he had his first child, a daughter, the day before the game, the night before the game.
Right.
Turns up at the ground, half asleep, and then just has the game of his life.
Playing on instinct. James, let's get stuck into a bit of Cagliari. It's their centenary season. Lots to be happy about. They're keeping in touch with the top of the table. They're 2 points off the Champions League places, despite actually having to navigate some difficult games so far already this season in Serie A. What do you make of them so far, and what do you think is realistic for them?
Well, they invested a lot in the team in the summer because of this historic occasion that is 100 years since the club was founded. And
we talked a bit about that at the start of the season, didn't we?
Yeah, and I suppose the big surprise, Luke, when you look at the table today, is that, yes, they've invested a lot in the team, but their star players, for the most part, have been out injured. They've suffered bad injuries. So I'm talking about the goalkeeper, Alessio Carragna, who I thought with Sirigu last year was the best Italian goalkeeper in Serie A. He suffered a bad back injury in their first, I think, Coppa Italia game against Chievo. Yeah, they've had to delay his return. They signed Robin Olsen from Roma, and Robin Olsen had an absolute horror show of a season last year, so that didn't really give you a lot of confidence that without Carragna that they could do well. And also, Cagliari are really interesting because in Serie A, there was a report a couple of weeks ago about how nobody crosses anymore. Crosses are dead.
Right.
Right. And yet Cagliari cross and cross and cross, but that's because they have the air attack, and the premier feature of that is Pavoletti, the guy who used to have a pet pig.
Well, you're gonna have to tell us more about that straight away.
Well, I mean, he lived like Vietnamese pig when he was back in Livorno, one of those micro pig kind of things.
Yeah.
And I think when he moved, he had to put the pig up for adoption, or it's with, I can't remember, a family member. Anyway, Pavoletti suffered a bad injury.
Where is it?
Well, I'll have to do some digging. I mean, that's why I'll win my Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah. Team feast.
Find out where it is, yeah.
But Pavoletti, who I think has scored more headed goals than, I mean, he's up there with Giroud, for example, over the last few years in Europe's top five leagues. He goes down, with his knee blows out. And so all of a sudden it's like, well, what do we do? And they signed Giovanni Simeone towards the end of the transfer window. And yeah, they've been able to still get results. I think they're unbeaten in something like 5 or 6 games now. They went to Napoli and won for the first time in a long, long time. They were lucky in that game. Napoli's finishing let them down. They hit the woodwork a few times. And
had a man sent off, didn't they, as well?
Yeah, and Cagliari only won that in stoppage time with more or less their only chance of the game. But, yeah, you have this momentum behind the team. I should mention also, in terms of their injuries, Nainggolan, you know, he rocked up and they were without him, I think, for three or four games after he picked up an injury, scored an absolute blinder. At the weekend. And yeah, they've got a lot of good momentum going for them. And you look at that midfield, it's actually a really good midfield with Nainggolan, Rog, who's been at Napoli for a while and has been talked about as a player with good potential, but never really got the opportunity to show it at Napoli. Nahitan Nandez, who's part of the Boca side that reached the Libertadores final. He's been very good as well. And yeah, with Lucas Castro, another guy who I absolutely love because when he was at Chievo, he used to just go and busk on the streets of Verona.
Nice.
And if you follow him on Instagram, he's always got his guitar in hand and he's either performing covers or he's performing his own music. And when he was at Chievo, they had like a band of Argentines who would, and it was literally a band. They would go around to his place, and they would get the pots and pans out and play music together. He's been very good.
He sounds great.
Out for a long time last year, and he's actually a very useful player. And then João Pedro and Simeone have done the business up front so far with both of them still being able to direct these crosses on goal. With headers. So, yeah, I struggle to believe that they'll be able to stay the course. But they want to push for Europa League, even though the owner yesterday was basically asked about this brilliant start to the season, what a fairy tale it is. Finally getting some good PR after a lot of the the racist incidents that unfortunately we've seen whenever teams go and play in Cagliari. Finally some good PR. He was saying, no, look, our objective is of course just to stay in the top flights. It's not, you don't put the money that they've put into this team unless you want to do something big to mark this centenary year.
Can I ask you a more, I suppose, a kind of sort of specialist question about, we mentioned that it's their centenary year. And I think a lot of people who think of the Italian mindset and think of Italian football will probably have a kind of romantic vision of what type of football is over there and how they play it and how they sort of interact with football. Is it something that can sustain them? Is it something that, because it's a centenary year, they'll have an emotional investment in it? Is that something that actually means something to Italian teams and players in the Italian league and Italians at large? Or is that just a romanticised sort of cliche of a British person thinking of them?
No, it's certainly provoked and been a source of inspiration for the owner to do something this year. And I think the players are, and the manager are feeding off that. Also because they have their coach, Rolando Maran, he is one of those kind of quite under the radar good coaches, I suppose, in that he kept Chievo honest and in the league for much longer than a team of that ability should have been, really. And when they sacked him, that's when everything kind of went to pot. And he was the guy who was at Catania, who led Catania to their best ever finish, the most points. I think they finished top eight and was able to, again, sort of take a team that had already done well under Diego Simeone. Remember when Diego first came to Europe and was coach of Catania, and Vincenzo Montella. He actually took that team on a little bit. So they've got all the thing. Because it's his second season, there was an expectation as well that they could do better in this centenary year. But I would say that the real tipping point, it comes from seeing Tommaso Giulini basically go out and bring Raja Nainggolan back to the club.
Yeah.
Because and circumstances have had to coincide here, because in normal, I would say no one would have expected Nainggolan to go back to Cagliari at this stage of his career when he's still in his early 30s. Yeah, he's ultimately gone because his wife, who he met whilst he was in Sardinia, is undergoing treatment for breast cancer, wants to be close to her family. And also, Inter decided to clean house in the summer and get rid of Nainggolan, get rid of Icardi, get rid of Perisic, and have said, well, let's send him on loan to you. So all of those things have aligned. But I do think these centenaries and these anniversaries do mean something.
Do they mean a lot more in Italy than they would do here, for example?
Wimbledon centenary was crap. We had some poor quality fireworks, and then we lost at home to QPR. Yeah.
Well, I think. The other thing to add here, Luke, is that, you know, Cagliari are the kind of only representative of Sardinia, I suppose. If you look at Sicily, then you've got Palermo, you've got Catania, you've got Messina, you've got all these clubs that at one stage or another have been in Serie A, sometimes have been in Serie A all at the same time. Cagliari are the only exponent of Sardinia. And that, I think that, again, is why these things mean more to clubs like that, because they're representing not just a city, not just a region, but an entire island with its own identity. So I think that is... there's a willingness to see this team that, let's not forget, is one of the few provincial clubs to actually come out and win the league back in the 70s. They've got a lot of history and tradition which they draw on, and I think, again, that's why this really is significant to them, that they do something and that they honour that history this year.
What do you make of the Ballon d'Or shortlist, guys? I mean, I'm not somebody who really cares too much about individual awards.
It's going to be a short conversation.
Oh, right, okay. But I thought some of our listeners might be interested in your guys' take on it. I mean, the obvious people are on there, obviously. What are your general thoughts about it?
Well, I think it's fair enough that Liverpool have got the most players on it because they look the most complete team in Europe last season. And the goalkeeper's bit of it is really doing my head in, though, having said that. I mean, Alisson, yeah, fair enough.
One of seven Liverpool players on it.
Yeah, that's right. Hugo Lloris, slightly more curious.
Yes.
Also...
James, what did you say to Andy when he said that earlier?
I mean, it's French, it's France football. I mean, look, ultimately, the way they go about this, you know, with... captains, managers, journalists, there is no room for bias to basically get in on this.
Are you guys consulted?
There's room for...
No, because it's one journalist per country.
Oh, okay, right. Who's our one?
I think it's Henry. Henry.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But there is room for weirdness, isn't there? Because, of course, the Yashin Award is between Jan Oblak and Marc-Andre ter Stegen. A lot of people would argue the two best goalkeepers in the world are either of them in the top 30.
No. Nope. Okay.
I enjoyed France football giving 8 reasons why Neymar was not on the list.
Well, he's only played half the games he's eligible for.
I mean,
so that makes him at 50% disadvantage straight away.
There is that, but they list the injuries, of course. And then there's like March 6th, abusing match official after Man United match. April 27th, pushing a supporter.
He actually punched him.
September 14th, jeered by PSG fans.
That's a reason. We can't have you in the shortlist for the best players in the world because a lot of your home fans actually quite hate you.
Yeah.
And it would be bad look for it'd be a bad look for us. Have you got any thoughts at all? I mean, I've just started this off by saying a lot of the obvious players are in there, obviously. Andy said he doesn't care and got one gripe about goalkeepers. James, have you got anything for us?
The surprising thing for me, again, was Cristiano Ronaldo spoke to the media before the Lokomotiv Moscow Juventus game, and he was asked about the Ballon d'Or. It was like, you know, it's getting close now. Do you want sixth title? And he was like, well, individual awards have never been of interest to me. The team comes first, you know, as long as my team is winning... then, you know, the awards will follow. It's like...
I love it. The journalist just...
Chris!
I'm sorry, what? What?
Yeah.
I will take that.
Yeah.
I will take that from Sun Heung-min.
I
will not take that from you.
I got the impression that his mantelpiece in Turin no longer has enough room for all these Ballon d'Ors that he's won in the past. And he's trying to discourage winning another one because he just doesn't really know where to put it.
Sure, he can get a better, bigger mantelpiece. I liked that there was a few Ajax players in there after their season last season.
I think they're in a position very much like Liverpool, really, after their fantastic season, in that the vote is totally split, isn't it? I mean, I do think that the players of the best teams are kind of a huge disadvantage. If you're looking below Ronaldo and Messi, or apart from Ronaldo and Messi, or obviously in a league of their own on a statistical level, it must be very difficult for one of those guys to win it. I mean, you know, you think of Franck Ribéry coming close in 2013. And of course, really, he was blown out of the water by that Cristiano Ronaldo performance in the World Cup playoff second leg in Sweden. That was the moment where he really took the title. But even before that, Ribéry had to campaign really heavily for himself, because you look at how good Bayern were in 2012-13 when they won the Champions League, and there were so many other players that you could have gone for. I mean, Robin would be the obvious one.
Mm.
And then you look at other outstanding players for them, Neuer, even Javi Martinez was absolutely fantastic and vital to what they were doing last season. And the feeling that, I suppose, with both Liverpool and Ajax, you can say it's a real triumph of the collective. And even with Liverpool's front three, it's hard to pick out just one, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the problem with these awards, right? That is inherently the problem with the whole thing, because it's a team sport. So if you talk about Spurs getting all the way to the Champions League final, which wasn't expected, I mean, the only representatives from Spurs are Son and I think Hugo Lloris.
Llorente's not on it.
And I know.
I wouldn't even got to the final without him.
And nor is Lucas Moura. You know, so it's kind of interesting. But anyway, I thought it's worth a little mention, because it's a big story and people who care about these kind of things will inevitably want us to talk about it. You guys have been absolutely clear and obvious in your disdain for the very existence of such a thing.
Clear and obvious is the only way to be.
Yeah, exactly. I might even overturn this section with VAR later on.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.